Psalm 40. Glad to have you in Bible class. I know a number of people are also watching online tonight. We're glad to have them join us for our study. We'll begin with a question. Are you feeling blue? Or have you had a bout with the blues at some time this month or this year? That is a phrase that goes back to the 1300s, 1385, as best I can tell. It is related, I think, to the old custom, a Navy custom, of if a ship's captain died at sea, then they would fly a blue flag, and sometimes they would paint a blue stripe on the hull of the ship so that as they came back in, they would know of the loss. Another phrase that we sometimes use is, down in the dumps. That's also an old phrase. It goes back to the 1300s. It's an old English word, dump, D-U-M-P, that means a fit of depression. It's thought to go back to an Egyptian king, Dumpus, D-U-M-P-O-S, who is said to have died of melancholy. And then there's a third word that we use, a phrase, down in the pits. Have you been down in the pits before? Now that's a biblical phrase, and that's what we're going to study tonight from Psalm 40. If you haven't already turned there, we invite you to turn your attention to this passage where David is down in the pits. He calls it a horrible pit in verse 2. Let's read the first three verses together, and then we will look at the six stages of David's recovery from being down in the pits. Verses 1 through 3, I waited patiently for the Lord, and He hath inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. So if you have ever been down in the pits or the dumps or had the blues, or even if you may be in such a condition presently, this is a good passage to study. And the Psalms are very much attuned to the emotions that all humans experience. And whatever you're feeling, you can find it somewhere in the Psalms. And this is a good Psalm where you find David being transparent. David just letting his feelings come out in his song or his writings. And in the first part of the Psalm, he is talking about a past experience. In the latter part of the psalm, which we won't study tonight, he talks about another experience of being down and out or discouraged. And this psalm is reversed. Usually you have the negative part in the first part of a psalm and then the celebration or the recovery in the second part of the psalm. But this one is divided verses 1 through 10 and verses 11 through the end of the chapter, I think verse 7. Yes, verse 17. All right, let's go into this and think about tonight the six stages of David's recovery. We're going to call this Don't Quit in the Pit. And that is a temptation for us. We get down, we get out, we think, I'm just going to give up. I'm going to throw in the towel. It's not worth it to be a Christian. But don't quit on a blue Monday or any other day. Number one, David is in a muddy pit. Did you pick up on that in verse 2? He brought me up also out of an horrible pit. There's our word. David is in a muddy pit. We know that because the next phrase is miry clay. We would say slippery mud probably. But he is down. He's comparing this, of course, to a physical experience, but he's talking about his emotional experience. There are those in the Bible, of course, who suffered from being in a literal pit. If you go to Rome, I'm told that they will show you a place where Paul was said to have been imprisoned. And it's a pit that at one time, I guess now they've made a back entrance so you can see inside of it, but at one time the only way to get in that pit was a circular hole at the top where they would let the prisoner down. And then when they brought a rock over it, there was no light. There was no airflow in that pit. Whether or not Paul was one of the prisoners in there can be a matter of speculation, but certainly man's cruelty to man is seen there because somebody was kept in that pit at times. And you think about Bible characters. What about Joseph? That may be the most famous story of a pit in Genesis 37 when his brothers kidnapped him and were going to murder him, but one of them talked the others out of it. So they put him in a cistern or a pit, and then they brought him up and sold him as a slave. And then when he got down to Egypt, he got thrown into the prison. That might have been a dungeon or another kind of pit. That's Genesis 39, and then he's brought out of the prison in Genesis 41. Another example of a pit in the Old Testament is Jeremiah. That one might not be as familiar to you, but Jeremiah 38, when he fell out of favor with the king, he threw him into a pit. There was no water, a cistern, but he sunk in the mud of that pit. And we'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to that section of this psalm. And then what about Daniel? Daniel was thrown in the lion's den, Daniel 6. That was probably a type of pit where they had the animals where they could control them, where they would not have access to people, of course. So they put Daniel down in the lion's den or the lion's pit. You don't have pits in the New Testament, except not of the natural kind, but you do have examples like David of being in an emotional pit. What about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane? Matthew 26, 36. That was very much like a pit because it was dark, literally and spiritually, emotionally. He was alone because his disciples had forsaken him, or did during that night. And then he was suffering from grief and sorrow. So that was a pit of a different kind. What about Paul in Acts 27? His pit was on a ship where there was such a terrible storm that they had given up hope of life. And God appears to Paul and tells him that he will spare his life and he will give him the sailors on the ship, but they have to remain on the ship, and they do. So they're saved. But that was a pit. They had given up hope. That brings us back now to David, where he is in his pit. We don't know exactly what circumstances. Sometimes you can tie a psalm to a particular event in David's life. Of course, David didn't write all the psalms, but he wrote most of the first book of the psalms, which are the first 73. And some of them are ascribed to David, others are thought to be David's, but they're not signed or not assigned an author. But here, this one says, to the chief musician, a psalm of David. David had a lot of troubles in his life. This could relate to the time when he was young. It could relate to the time when he was a king. It could relate to the time when he was hounded by Saul and he was out in the wilderness. It could relate to the time when Absalom rebelled against him and he had to flee his own palace. We don't know. David had a lot of trouble, especially in the latter part of his reign because of his sin, and there was a punishment that resulted from that over the last 20 years of David's reign. All right, let's go into this now and think about four characteristics of a pit. We'll relate it first to David, and then we will see how we tie into this. First, a pit. You say, I'm down in the pits. What does that mean? A pit is a place of confinement. You know, when they put Joseph in that pit, he couldn't get out. That was the main purpose of a pit, was to keep him where he was. And sometimes when circumstances hem us in, we feel like we're confined. We don't have any way out. We feel like we're stuck. Well, that's a characteristic of a pit. You can see several verses there. Colossians 1:13, been delivered from the power of darkness. Well, Sin in the Bible is, and I'll give you the verses in a minute, is often referred to as darkness. But there it says we've been delivered from the power of darkness. So there is a power that's related to sin, the consequences of sin, and the results of our bodies and minds being deteriorating over time since the Garden of Eden and even during our own lifetimes. You could put it down 1 Timothy 6, 9, and 10. Talks about being pierced through with many sorrows. And 2 Timothy 2, 24, taken captive by the devil at his will. So there are these verses are about being confined. Now, let's think about a second one. Well, before, let me illustrate it. It may be that David is feeling like he's been trapped. He may have, if he was writing it during the time when Saul was chasing him, he would try to hem him in and trapped him at times, but he always was able to get away. He may be relating to the custom of how they hunted in those days. And some parts of Africa and the Polynesian Islands still hunt this way. When you have a big predator, like a big cat, it's very dangerous. You have primitive weapons. So what they would do was to dig a large pit, a deep pit. And then they would choose a place, of course, where the animal was known to hunt, maybe a trail. And then along about sundown, they would tie a living goat in the bottom of the pit. And of course, that goat would cry out, especially as he got hungry. And he was tied, so he was not happy. So he was bleating over and over and over. And that sound would draw the predator. And in the darkness, he might leap at the sound. And they've covered the hole with foliage and limbs. And he might leap and go in, or he might just wander up and step in to the hole. But either way, once he was in, he was not able to get back out. It was too deep and the sides were too steep. So he was trapped, and then they could be rid of that predator that was a threat to the village. So David may be feeling like he stepped in a trap. Maybe a trap that the devil's laid for him, and now he's regretting the consequences of his bad decision. Well, we may feel confined because of our decisions, sometimes because of our sins that hem us in. What about number two? It's a place of darkness. The sun may be shining brightly, and it may be bathing the earth in its rays, but just a few feet away, not a ray of sunshine makes it into the pit. When that rock comes over the top, when the curve in the cave causes the light to stop, there's only darkness. Now, what this is emotionally is ignorance or a lack of understanding of what to do. I'm sure you've been there at points in your life when you're like, I don't know which way to turn. I'm just in the dark. I don't know whether I should do this or whether we should do this or, well, what is the right course of action? Sitting in darkness. I mentioned darkness earlier. There are several verses that show sin as being darkness. And you could jot, I think I did put these on the slide. Yes, Isaiah 9, 2 in the Old Testament talks about those that sat in darkness and saw a great light. Of course, that's a prophecy of when Jesus went into the Gentile area, Matthew 4, 16. Micah 7, 8, when I sit in darkness, the Lord shall be a light unto me. Acts 26, 18, turn them from darkness, that is ignorance of paganism, to light, the light of the gospel. Romans 13, 12, cast off the works of darkness. We're children of the day, not children of the night. So the Bible talks about darkness a lot, and the figure is ignorance or sin. You could put down in your notes, if you're taking notes tonight, Psalm 79, 8, Psalm 142, 6. In fact, flip over to Psalm 142. Now, that's fairly familiar. You may want to mark it in your Bible. It has to do with confusion. Psalm 142:6. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. When he says he's in a pit, he's in a pit of darkness. That's a despondency. That's a discouragement. That's a being brought very low. Maybe you have been at a point in your life and you were low, but then something worse happened and then you were very low. You know, there are times in life when we are really struggling. And those are times when, like David, we find ourselves saying to God, I'm very low. Help me pull out of this. And 2 Corinthians 4:8-9 talks about the apostles and what they suffered. And it says, not despairing. They had a lot of discouraging things happen to them, but they were able to overcome them and not despair of life. Let's move on to number 3. A pit is a place of distress. Now you imagine Joseph or Daniel or David being thrown into a pit. The first reaction is going to be, well, I'm confined, I'm trapped. The second one is, oh, it's dark in here, I can't see anything. The third reaction is going to be, I got to get out of here. This is not where I want to stay and spend. So it's a place of distress. And maybe you have felt, I'm sure we have all felt, at times when things have worked against us, maybe a death, an untimely, unexpected death, or financial problems, or family issues, and really distressed about what to do and how to fix it, and what would be the thing that God would expect me to do under these circumstances. Notice in Psalm 40, if you flip back, David uses a modifier here. He says, he brought me up, I'm in verse 2, also out of an horrible pit. One version has a desolate pit, a miserable pit, a cold pit. If you, you may have a marginal reference there that says a pit of noise. And this word has an element in it. It can mean roaring, like the ocean is roaring, or it can mean like a cacophony of voices. If you have a large crowd of excited people and they're all talking at the same time, it's just overwhelming, the noise. It can be used of soldiers in a battle. And so there's this noise of this life and death struggle. So the idea seems to be, when you combine the two, the pit and the noise, it seems to be related to being a well or a cistern. You know, there's where your water would come in, the roaring of the water. So this person has been thrown into a pit. Not only is it dark in there, not only is it confining in there, but there's all this noise. So there's all this confusion. Well, that's the idea. It's a state of confusion. If you or someone that you know and care about suffers from discouragement or depression at times, it may be that there are voices, advice that they get from different people or you get from different people. Somebody might say, that's all in your head. You know, that's just your imagination. Someone else may say, you're just out of sorts. Just snap out of it. Someone else might say, you need to go to the doctor and get a pill, and he'll have you going again in a week for sure. Someone else might say, you just need to pray more. You need to read your Bible more, and things will look a lot better to you. Now, none of those is bad advice in some instances. In fact, that might be the thing that a person needs to hear in certain circumstances. But none of those is a blanket answer in that situation. None of those ought to be given with the authority of a doctor who says, okay, this is what's going to fix this problem, because we are not qualified to answer that. Even when you think about the spiritual aspect of it, we have a soul and there is a spiritual aspect to forgiving ourselves of our sins and accepting the forgiveness of God, I guess is a better way to say that. But even then, there may be a physical reason for it. There may be some issues, psychological issues in the past that contribute to it that are not, that might require professional help or even medication. So here you have David saying he was in a horrible pit. It was confusing. All these voices that come at him. And I found a picture, I thought, that sort of illustrates how life can come at us sometimes, and everything is a blur around us, what to do, where to go, how to act, what does God expect of me? That's the idea of the horrible pit, the pit of despair where David finds himself. Now we should remember that in that pit, God cares. We may be confused, but God isn't confused. 1 Peter 5, 7 says that we can cast our care upon Him, for He cares for us. We also find in John 14, 1, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. So whether it's sorrow and grief, whether it's loneliness, whether it's tragedy we're trying to get over, whether it's abuse that someone has done, something that someone has done to us, whether it is disappointment with others, God cares. God sees the tears in the night when, as David said in that verse we did not read, Psalm 6:6, he drenched his couch with tears. Well, some people know more about that than other people do, because they have experienced a wet pillow in the night because of the pain and the suffering that maybe others don't ever know about. But God knows, and God cares, and God allows us to cast our care upon Him. So, a pit is a place of distress, but it's also a place of despair. Now, this one is a little worse than distress. You think about that man who's been thrown into the pit, whether it's Joseph or Daniel or David. At first, there's the immediate, I'm confined, I'm in darkness, and then there's the I got to get out of here, the distress. But then, after he's tried to climb out for a day and a night, maybe a week, and he's sat there and thought about every possible way to get out, and finally it has occurred to him or come to him that I'm not going to be able to get out of this. I am stuck. Now that's when hopelessness settles in and despair. Despair is a difficult emotion to deal with. I put Jeremiah 38:6 there because, as I mentioned earlier, Jeremiah was let down into a cistern, and if it had not been for a relatively unknown friend of his, an Ethiopian who let down a rope to him and pulled him out, he was sinking in the mud. Josephus was a Jew who was also a Roman historian. He lived in Rome and worked for Caesar, but he wrote Jewish history. And he was an advisor to Caesar. But he wrote about cisterns that sometimes people were put in as punishment. In his day, that would have been the time just after Jesus. He said they were 20 to 30 feet deep, and sometimes they had mud in the bottom of them. Now remember, these are wells or cisterns. The rain goes in there. So sometimes they had mud that was up to an adult's chin. Can you imagine being imprisoned in a well or a cistern? And gradually sinking, until all you had out was your head to breathe. Wouldn't that be a miserable, miserable experience? So this text also mentions that a horrible pit out of the miry clay. I've been sinking in the mud, he would say. I can't get a foothold. My feet are slipping. Now, we can relate to that physically, but what he's talking about is emotionally, spiritually, he can't get a foothold. He can't get an accurate reading of what to do. He's confused. He's feeling hopeless. Well, I may have put this on a screen. Yes, I did. Psalm 69, 1 and 2. This is the same idea. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my soul. I'm in over my head. I have sunk in deep mire, and there is no foothold. I have come into deep waters, and the flood overflows me. All right, let's think about number 3. Well, let me make the application on that before we leave it. Let's bring ourselves into the picture. Being unable to change a situation can lead to feelings of despair. Want to be out of this? How can I fix this? What can make this misery go away? Well, there are a lot of ways that we might get there. Here's a businessman that just keeps having more and more things put on his plate to the point where he is just about to break. And that goes on not for a week or a month, but for a year and then another year. And there's only so much he feels like he can take. It can be the exasperation of a mother with 3 or 4 small children, and they're crying all the time, and she's got one that's sick, and she's got this one that needs to be changed, and it's just a constant process, and it's so exasperating. It can be a lingering chronic illness. You know, it's one thing to be sick for a couple of days or to have to be in the hospital a week, but it's another thing to be sent home from the hospital, and it's never going to be the same as it used to be. And I got to learn to deal with a new normal, the lingering effects of chronic illness. It can also be the overextended requirements or assignments of a student. You know, here's a student who's trying to get a degree. Maybe it's a difficult degree, and it will lead to a good career and job, but it's just about all that he or she can take, and maybe a little bit more as they get into a graduate program, and they may by that time also have other responsibilities like an internship or a spouse, or maybe even a child. So they're trying to balance all of that. And it also could be a powerful enemy who is just always riding the case of this person. They may destroy me at any time. That can wear on a person so that there are feelings of despair. That's where David was. He was in a pit, a horrible pit, a pit with miry clay. But now let's see number two. He cried out to God. On purpose, we spent more time on our first point than we will. We'll spend a little more on point 3. These others won't need as much explanation. He cried out to God. Well, that's a natural thing to do when one is at the end of his or her rope. What is the natural response? God, help. That may be one reason that David was such a favorite of God's, a man after God's own heart. Acts 13, 22. Because David cried a lot. I don't mean he was whiny. I don't mean that he was a weak man. He cried in the sense that what you see is what is real with him. I mean, he's transparent. And when you read his psalms, his songs, when you read his prayers, when you listen to his conversations, there's no pretending in them. He says to God what is in his heart. I mean, if he's sad, he puts it out there just like he's feeling it. And if he's happy, he's leaping in front of the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, he's just a man of transparency and energy. But here, he cried, God, I'm stuck. I can't get out of this. I'm in a pit. It's dark in here. I don't know what's going to happen. So he cried out to God. You could put in your notes, there are other instances. You have it in Matthew 26 when Jesus is in the garden. What does he do? He's weeping. Hebrews 5, 7, strong, crying in tears, that text says. He's sweating blood, or great drops as of blood. And he's asking God to take this cup from me. But then once God says no, once he figures out there's no plan B, there's nobody else to drink the cup, somebody's got to drink it, it's going to be me, then there is a settled peace that comes over Jesus. And if I think of it, I'll point that out as we go through how that parallels what David is experiencing here. So he cries out to God. And there are several verses with David, Psalm 66, Psalm 56, 8. 56, 8 talks about taking his tears in God's bottle. God, I'm weeping here. Do you see this? Don't let this go to waste. You see how bold his prayer is? How real? Jesus said, blessed are they that mourn in the New Testament, for they shall be comforted, Matthew 5, 4. He says that those who ask receive, Matthew 7, 7. 1 Peter 5, 7, we mentioned earlier, says that we can cast our care upon him. John 14, 13 and 15, 7 are promises to his disciples and to us that whatsoever we ask in his name, he will give us. Now, that's obviously with a caveat that it is the Father's will, but that's a blank check he's given to his children. So when we cry, he's inviting us to cry unto him. Now, it may not be in his will that this thing that is bothering me is something that he wills not to be there. And we don't always understand that, but Paul had that situation, 2 Corinthians 12, 7 to 9, where he had a thorn in the flesh and he prayed to the Lord about it. Three times he begged the Lord. The Lord said, no, my grace is sufficient for thee. So Paul said, I'll therefore rejoice in it. I will magnify my infirmities, he said. So cried to the Lord. Let's move on. Number three, he waited for the Lord. Now this is the hard one. The first three verses of the psalm say, I waited patiently. That's hard to do. That's hard for Americans to do. That's probably hard for you and me, certainly, to do. Wait patiently. It might have to say, if it was being written about us, I waited impatiently. You know, we don't like to wait. We don't like to wait in the drive-thru. We don't like to wait in the grocery store line. We don't like to wait in the doctor's office. We just don't like to wait, you know. I got important things to do. Why are these people in my way? I want to be up at the counter now. That's a lack of patience. And those things I mentioned are not very important. It may run us late to an appointment or something, but there are other things that we have to wait on that are far more important. What about waiting on a spouse, a non-Christian spouse, to obey the gospel? 1 Peter 3. That takes patience. What about saving a marriage that's on the rocks? That takes patience. What about relief from surgery pain? You know, this may take 6 weeks. This may take 6 months. This therapy may go on for a year. That takes patience. What about waiting for the next cancer scan and praying and thinking and wondering if the medicine is working? What about waiting for the grief to subside when it's so painful to open a drawer and see something that triggers an emotion within us, or to see a picture on a desk, or to hear somebody mention a name or say something and it just brings everything back to us? What about waiting for a job when the bills are piling up and the children are saying, I got to have this money for school? Yes, sometimes it's hard to wait. There are two elements that are required for waiting. One is humility, the other is hope. Humility. I don't know everything. God knows everything. I made a mess out of things. We would all say that to some degree. God's never messed up anything. So I'm going to have to trust Him to get me through this. That takes humility. It's not enough to say, okay, I prayed, God, I'm ready for it. It's, thy will be done. When it is thy will, if it is thy will, help me to learn, help me to grow. And if it's not thy will, help me to learn to adjust and glorify thee in these circumstances. You know, we have to learn to live with some mystery. I was reading this week, somebody said that God is doing 10,000 things in our lives at any given time, and maybe we know about three of them. And the three that we know about, we may not really understand. But that's not our job. Our job is to trust God to work things out for our good. Romans 8:28. He made that promise. He will keep it. I don't have to figure everything out, but I have to be patient until He fixes it. The other one is hope. I wanted to give you John 13:7 on that first point, though. What I am doing, you do not understand now, but you will know after this. He said that to His disciples, and I suppose sometimes that's true of us. What He's doing, we don't understand, but later we'll look back on it. And you know, what's the song we sing? Farther along, I'll know all about it. Farther along, I'll understand why. What about hope? Now, Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in Thee. You know, if you don't have hope, you can't wait, because that's what inspires the waiting, is the hope. Psalm 130, verse 5, I wait for the Lord, my soul does wait, and in His word do I hope. Number four, God draws him out of the pit of safety, to safety. Here he is in the pit. He's cried to God. He's waited patiently. And when it was the right time, God did what He asked Him to do. He took him out of the pit. And perhaps it seemed to David as it seems to us in our dark times. This is never going to get any better. This is hopeless. And I haven't dealt with suicide as a minister much. But counselors and those teachers that we had who trained us in some general counseling techniques, I remember them saying, and remember reading, that someone who is thinking about suicide often feels like this can't ever get better. This is the way life is, and therefore I'm going to end it. But the truth is, things can pretty rapidly change in a person's life. They can't see it in the darkness. But you let a solution be found to a particular problem. You let a relationship or a job or a situation be corrected. You let a medication be administered. And suddenly the sun comes out. Suddenly, hey, things aren't so bad. Well, here, David was patient enough to wait, and God brought him out of his darkness. I really like Psalm 34:19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. I guess many of us would agree with that. There's problems in life, but the Lord delivers him out of, I like the last two words, them all. Not most of them. All of them. Now, maybe not with the solution we wanted, but with a solution that He wanted. Number five, God gave him a song. He brought him out. He put his feet on a rock. He had a foothold that he didn't have before. He advanced him, so he now had a purpose in life. He established his goings, the latter part of verse 2. Then the first part of verse 3, he hath put a new song in my mouth. A new song. What that indicates is there now is joy where there had been despair. If any is merry, let him sing psalms. In James 5, what was that, 11, 12, 13. Merry, sing psalms. That's just the natural thing. If you're happy, you sing. So God gave him a song, but He gave him a new song. A new song represents a new experience. No, it's good to learn new songs. It's good to sing new songs in our worship. I read about one lady who was complaining about a new song. She said, why do we have to learn these new songs? The songs that we grew up with were great songs. Like that song last Sunday, it had a good text, but the music was discordant and the rhythm was unthinkable. And you might think that's somebody today. She said that in 1890. And you know what song she was referring to? What a Friend We Have in Jesus. A song that now has been sung for 130 years and everybody loves it, but she didn't like it the first time it came out. Revelation 5:9 says they sung him a new song. All songs were new at one time, and a new song represents a new experience. It may not be an experience that's never been had in the history of the world, but it's a new experience for the person. You see, this person comes out of the pit, and he said, I got to remember this. I'm going to write a song about this. And so he writes a song to remember the experience. Remember that God has delivered him. And it also is a new way to magnify the name of God. You take a telescope. Well, you go outside tonight. You look up at the sky. Probably none of us would have even noticed the stars tonight if I had mentioned that. May not anyway. But if we had noticed, it was twinkle, twinkle, little star. You know, they're so small. Little star. You put a telescope to the sky, and some of those stars would dwarf our sun and make it seem like a speck. That's what a song does. A song magnifies the object of the song. That's why music is so powerful for sin in the lives of young people and anybody's life. It magnifies whatever the song is about. If it's about drugs, if it's about drinking, if it's about sex, if it's about violence, and you hear that song over and over and it plays in your mind, well, that's glorifying those acts. It's also true in a positive way. Here's a song about God, something God's done, something God is, and we sing that song. It magnifies Him in the moment because it draws attention to Him. It's a new song. It's a new way to praise God. So, new songs are good, and songs that commemorate God's actions, His deliverance of us, are good. Here's an old song, but it has that message in it. And when I think that God, His Son not sparing, sent Him to die, I scarce can take it in that on the cross my burden gladly bearing, He bled and died to take away my sin. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to Thee. God, how great Thou art. How great Thou art. That was a new song at one time, but it commemorated a person's salvation. And then number six, number last. Others see and benefit from the deliverance. That's the last part of verse 3. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. When a person has to go through a difficult time and his friends and church members, maybe community, know about that, then when God brings them out of that and things get better and they've learned how to deal with it, others benefit from that. Others say, well, if she could go through that, then I can face what I got to face. It's not that bad. You know, we are comforted that we might comfort others. 2 Corinthians 1, 3, and 4. All right, our time is up, but I'm going to close with this. Don't quit in the pit. Pits are inevitable. We're going to face them. Jesus said that we're going to have tribulations, Acts 14, 22. But here's our last verse. Be not weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Don't quit in the pit. Thank you for your attention tonight.